And now we get ready for those who are going to share their thoughts with us this evening. And this is a young couple here that they're in love. And they took a romantic trip to Paris, darling. To Paris. And they met in the dog kennel. Oh, no, it was a cat kennel. Is that where you met?
That's the really short story, Millie, yeah.
That's the short story. The long story we better not listen to. But this couple met while they were looking for a kitty down at the... Yeah, at the lost and found cat supply place. And they have fallen in love, and now they love each other, and it's been wonderful for me to watch, because I saw this young man turn from sadness to happiness. So I'm not exactly sure what they're going to talk about tonight, but just remember, it's so wonderful when you find somebody that fits with you, and you can love them, and they love you in return. What a wonderful happening, and that's what this couple has, although they've been married for 65 years they've been married. So, anyhow, they look good for their age. And this is our Jim and Renee.
I brought you water, honey. Yeah, it's 5 minutes late. We got notes. You know, when we first talked to Millie about coming up and speaking, we thought we would be talking about the astonishing amount of God stories and the just the huge amount of help we got from the angels individually and together to bring us together. We didn't actually meet at the cat shelter. We didn't meet at the cat shelter. That's a whole nother God story. We were supposed to, and we didn't. And but Millie's right. We went to Paris. These songs that we sang tonight were very appropriate. This is like this one. Enjoy yourself. It's later than you think. Well, that's basically what I sang to her when I talked her into let's go to Paris. I said, you know, we're probably not going to get to do this if we don't do it soon. But we've got a lot to talk about tonight. We've got a lot to cover. We got some real good ahas while we were out. While we were away, we got some good information. Renee received the same message over and over in the different places that we went to. And in a very different way, I had much the same experience. Renee's experience was a constant message, and my experience was a message of constancy. So we'll let Renee talk about hers first.
Thank you. I love Paris, and I've been there 4 times, and the highlight of each trip was standing in front of the Mona Lisa. Her eyes are mesmerizing. She tells me things about my soul that I could not possibly imagine thinking up for myself. The first 3 times I went, I couldn't remember what it was she said after the experience, but I remember what it felt like in my heart. This time when I met her, I needed to make sure that I was front and center in front of the Mona Lisa. So I drugged Jim out without breakfast, made sure we had a museum pass so we would not have to stand in line, told him not to take pictures on the way, that he could take them on the way back. And there we were. The doors opened at, we were in the line at 8:30, the doors opened at 9, and the line behind us was huge, and we ran right to the Mona Lisa front and center. And there I stood for 20 minutes looking into her eyes, and she told me things. She told me amazing things. She told me that, yes, I do reflect you. So all of this time, I got confirmation from her. She's told me I am whole now. And I think that's because my soul is open now. And I talked to my angels here, and it's Millie that taught me how to do this, right here, right now. Because I have open communication now, I was able to hear it and retain what it was that has been she's been trying to give me all this time. When you look at a painting, I look at their eyes, and their eyes shift. And when the eyes shift in the picture, they are ready to reveal something to you. My essence is clean now. She said, "You are a woman." And I felt that to the core of me, woman with a capital W. She said, "I am no longer an injured child. I am a woman." And I credit Millie's class, AA, and my good marriage for that. She said to me, "Find out more about Jesus. Have a stronger relationship." She showed me vistas that I can go deeper and wider in my spiritual life. The scriptures and the experience are the most important things, not the philosophy. I probably stayed with her for 20 minutes. If you look into the eyes of great paintings or sculpture, you can sense the personality. Let the lights shifting sweep you into an experience. The subject can give you advice. I saw the painting by Titian, Pilgrims at Emmaus, and Jesus came to life with me. His face seemed to pop out of the painting. And the story is the story of Luke 24, when two men were on the road, and they were talking about Jesus, and this was right after the resurrection, and a third man came along, and they were talking about everything. And when the three of them sat down to break bread, when Jesus broke the bread, suddenly the two of them recognized who he was, and he vanished. So this is that painting that's the moment of that recognition. And in that face, I heard him speak to me. He was showing himself, Jesus was showing himself to them in hidden ways to bring about their understanding without shocking them. And Jesus told me, "You are my daughter. God has given you to me. And seek me." So it is the resurrection of Jesus that I should seek. And I looked all over the room for paintings, and I would light on ones that I thought were important. But I also saw pictures of Jesus at the crucifixion, Jesus dying, Jesus as in the Madonna and the child, and it wasn't the Jesus that I was seeking. But I did find a lot of interesting paintings and sculptures there. One of them is De La Roche's Young Martyr. And she said to me, "You have freedom." If you don't know the painting, she's laying out on the water with her hands bound and a golden halo around her. And when she told me, "I have freedom," I thought of our spiritualist church and how our spiritualists used to be drummed out of town, and they used to not be able to see. If they had a meeting, you had to do it in the dark because it was supposed to be unseen. It wasn't supposed to be happening. And I saw the Venus of de Milo, and her eyes spoke to me. She looked at the future with determination, and she told me about my future, that I would be writing a book, that it would be about the things I knew about, that it would be about Millie's class, it would be about with my relationship with Jim. At last, I found the resurrection of Jesus. It was in the Basilica Sacra Cœur, meaning Sacred Heart, and it's on the top of the hill overlooking Paris. And there on the altar and up onto the ceiling, there was a picture of Jesus in the resurrection, in the white robes, tinged with gold, and a huge gold heart in the middle. And I looked at him, and I knew the resurrection. I knew that there was life. I knew that there was a spiritual life, and that you don't really die, that there is no death, that there is only the resurrection. And Jesus told me things. He said that I should ask him to purify my heart whenever I had problems with people or situations that I didn't like or desires I shouldn't have, to ask Jesus to purify my heart. And so I've been doing that, and it's been working really well. And when we went to England, there we went to Windsor Castle, and there is St. George's Chapel, and there's a bas-relief with Jesus, resurrected Jesus, in the center. And on both sides of him, there are depictions from the different Gospels, where he came to Mary over here, and where he came to the 12 disciples over here. And so you could see all of the stories in the Bible on this altar. And so I looked at that, and I said, Jesus, I love you. And he just said, I love you, Renee. And my heart just overflowed. Then we went to an abbey in the city of Bath. And there was no resurrected Jesus in there, but there was a silver cross that was sparkling. And the empty cross was a symbol of the risen Christ. And again, he said, I love you, Renee. Today, my relationship with Jesus is stronger than ever. And I am blessed to have these strong touchings with Jesus, and my heart is filled with love for him.
And She got him. Bang, 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 bang. In the moment, it's great. And my realizations didn't really come that way. Mine took more introspection. Mine took sitting down and putting fingers on keys and writing before I figured out what the heck I had going on. Spiritual searching is a really pretty universal trait. I think we can all agree on that. And yet there are people who are unwilling or unable to look within or even without to find out what their purpose is and to find out what spiritual things might be, their reason for being. I'm not one of those people. I've known really from a very early age in my mother's lap. My mother taught us to pray as soon as she taught us to speak. So my spiritual life started very early on, and you'll see where I'm going in a minute, so just kind of bear with me. Born and raised Catholic as a little guy. I was born and raised Catholic. And so there was all that ritual. There was all that grandeur in the churches. There was all that. I'm old enough to remember that Mass was in Latin. It wasn't in English when I started out. And so there's all this ritual, and it just filled my heart. And so I had that belief about God at that early age, the things that my mother taught me. And the things that I learned in catechism, the things that I learned from going to Catholic school as a smaller child. And at one point, they didn't really jive very well. My mother's father had just passed away. I was probably 8. And when you're 8, you don't get it that people are hurting. I didn't. Maybe some people do. I didn't. And so I was very excited. I was very interested in this whole thing. My mom's dad had died. And I know what they told us in church about people that died. And so I went to her and I said, Mom, where did your daddy go? And she looked at me and she said, oh, honey, he went to heaven. But really, up until that point, my mother had never said anything nice about the guy. All she ever talked about was the terrible things that he did. And so it really sort of blasted my caps. And I was like, wait, this doesn't fit. And then in my early teens, my parents got busy doing whatever it was. They had their own lives. We were a little older now. We were out of diapers. So they had their own interests and stuff. And going to church every week wasn't one of them anymore. But we had a bus that would come around and pick up all the stray kids and take them to church on Sundays. Yeah, it was the First Baptist in Albuquerque, New Mexico. It was the most amazing thing. And we're on an Air Force base. How did the bus even get on the base? I don't know. But so they would pick us up and they'd sent us off. And we had, Sunday school and Mass and, church and all of that. And they gave us a kind of a different idea, a different perspective, a different viewpoint of this whole God thing. And And then after I got older and moved out of my parents' house, my dad found out. I didn't really expect that the school was going to call the house and say, your son hasn't been to school in a month and a half. What's going on? You know? And my dad came in my room one day and he says, you're not going to school. And I said, no, I'm not. And he said, that's all right. He says, you have two choices. You can get a job or get out. So I did both. I joined the Navy. And that was, they say, it's not just a job, it's an adventure. And it's true. It's an adventure. I won't go into a lot of it. But what I do want to touch on is that there was a Holy Roller Church that I found at my first duty station in Hawaii. And so the Oil in the Lamp song, boy, we had verses for, you could sing that song for 2 hours and never do it. Give me shoes on my feet, let me witness in the street. Give me gas for my Ford, keep me trucking for the Lord. We had one guy, he did, give me hot sauce for my tacos, let me witness to the vatos. It was, and so this was yet another way of looking at a relationship between God and humans. And sadly, going to church once a week didn't really make as much of an influence in my life as going to the club and getting drunk every night. And so I went down that path, and it was a really easy path to follow. Got out of the Navy, went home, started raising kids. Got sober. I'm trying to give you guys the really short Reader's Digest version of all of this, because really what's going on is that I'm trying to touch on the various different ways that people can interact with God at various different stages of their lives. And here I was a seeker. I'd always been a seeker. And there were things that got in the way of that, of course. But the bottom line is that I've always been seeking for all of this stuff. And so finally, when I got sober, and in AA they tell you, you have to find a God of your own understanding. They're really good at saying, all that garbage you're carrying around about what other people told you God was, just let that go. Try to go within. Try to find out, who is this God guy? What's going on between the two of you? Because you got a disease, buddy, and if you don't get some help, you're going to drink until you die. So I did that. And I started trying to cobble together some kind of an idea on what God is and what God means to me and what's my part in all of that. And the really cool thing is that AA gives us a purpose. It says in the little book in AA that our purpose is to make ourselves fit to be of service to God and to the people around us. And it was so wonderful, finally, after 35 years, to have a reason for breathing in and out and taking up space. And so then, I fell off the wagon. I had some troubles. And it was around then that, it was just before I fell off the wagon that I met this nice lady. And anyway, one thing led to another, and I started drinking again, and I was out for another 3.5 years after being not sober for 9. And when I finally realized that I needed to get back into AA, because I was happy when I was sober, and I sure wasn't happy when I was loaded, I started coming back around here. This is the guy that Miss Millie remembers. I would dress in black. I would sit in the back. And truly, the first time I showed up, all I did was cry. So what's constant throughout all of this, through this really quick and dirty biography that I've just bored you to tears with? It's not my physical size, because that changed. It wasn't my abilities. That changed too. It wasn't the condition of my body. It wasn't my mental acuity. It wasn't how much smarts I had or what I had learned in school or had learned on the street. It wasn't my sanity or my lack of sanity. It wasn't any of those things. And so what I come to find out and what I've learned on this trip is that the things that I believed about God and how I interact and have a relationship with God changed over the space of my life. And but something remained constant through it all. And what remains constant is what Millie tells us every week, over and over again. We're bubbles of God. You know, we're love volume. That's who we are. We're not our bodies. And this was the big aha for me. It's all well and good to say, oh, I'm not my body. Okay, I'm gonna take this set of clothes off. Like you say, when it doesn't work anymore, we let it go. It's just like, you know, I'm not gonna keep a dead car in the driveway. I'm gonna find a place to put it. And so I'm not my body. But it goes beyond that, because really the other stuff that we think we are is just the stuff that takes that bubble of God and sticks it in the body. My intelligence, my mind, my emotions, all of these things that I think make up me, my personality, all of that stuff is really not what we take with us when we go. We take one thing with us, that's that love volume. And so I got a very, very deep understanding of who I really am, what I really am. Before we left, Reese Reeves told me, I was telling him, we're going to go to the catacombs in Paris. You know, it's all the dead bones. And Reese did what he does. He's probably done this to y'all. He put his hand on my shoulder and he got this look in his eye, like he does. And he looked me dead in the eye and he said, when you're down there, pay attention. And I did that. I went down there and I let the people in front of me go by, and it was a little while before the people behind me came in, and I just sat quiet and I opened myself up. And I was expecting, I don't know what I was expecting, or I was expecting something, because Reese said it was going to happen. And it did. But it wasn't what I expected at all. All I got was my angels. All I got was my angels. And they were laughing at me. What do you think is down here? Because what I got in this place full of thousands of dead people's bones, I'm serious, they're stacked up this high, this tall, this deep. Bones and skulls and you know, there's no like bars to keep you from touching it. You can pick up Yorick and look at him if you want. But there wasn't anything there. It was clean. The place was empty. No wandering spirits, no lost souls, no of these, oh, he doesn't know he's dead yet. No. None of that. Just my little angels laughing at me. And the other big thing that happened was that when we went to Stonehenge, I was as far away from those rocks as I am now from that back wall. We came up, you have to walk under the road in a little a tunnel, and you come up and you look, and there it was. And there was just boatloads of people there. And they were all having their experience, trying to take pictures or talking to each other and this and that. And I stood there and I cried. I cried for 15 minutes. Couldn't figure out why at first, but then I did it again. I opened up my heart. And the thought came through, they moved the rocks. It was like shock. It was like appalling. And I asked, okay, what's really going on here? And I get that I was a caretaker of this place, not 500 years ago when they moved the rocks, but 800, 1,000 years ago in the heyday when there was hundreds of years of ceremonies happening in this place, and I don't know, wasn't any great priest. I was just somebody that took care of the place, that swept it up. Every one of those rocks has a name, and every one of those names has to do with the vibration, the song that that rock sings. And once again, it was just another way to relate to God. Just another way to broaden and deepen my relationship with God. So the variety of spiritual experiences that we have, not only just by different people having different experiences, but by the same person having different experiences in their lives, proves that God comes to us exactly the way we, through our deeply held beliefs, come to God. As we move towards God, God moves toward us in the same fashion. And it also proves that we are not our senses, we are not our minds, we are not our intelligence or our ego. Those things connect us to our bodies. Who we really, really are is our spirit soul. This is enough. That, I mean, I could talk for hours, but that's all I can do for right now. But I thank you for giving us this time, and thank you for listening to us.
Good job, you kids. They were really explaining the unexplainable. Weren't they? That was wonderful, you kids. And it's been so wonderful for me to watch them. Yes, he was always completely in black. Black hair, black everything. Black, black. Long black coat. But inside all of that was this wonderful kid. And again, he just, most of you know the story, he decided he wanted to time now that he really wanted to have a nice lady in his life, so with that boy meet girl thing. And of course she had been peeking at it too, and then they decided that maybe they'd like to meet, but where are we going to meet so that we're out? Because I don't know if I can trust you, and you don't know if you can trust me. We got to meet in the public somewhere. So they both wanted a cat, so they met at the Humane Society. And then one found that they were in a Tuesday night class, and the other one found they were in a Thursday night class. And they now are together just like, you know, just so close and so happy. Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that grand? What do you say, George, about that?
I think it's beautiful.
And they shared their trip to the best of their ability, and I think it was too big to share. But you did a good job of it, you kids. And they sure love each other. Is that grand? Makes me happy.